Welcome to the Coach Curl podcast. In a world of increasing pace and complexity, Coach Curl invites you on a journey of simplicity, a simple approach to life, helping you align your actions in becoming the greatest version of you. To simplify and purify your life, it starts now. Life isn't easy, but it can be simple. Tony Curl is the author of Seriously Simple Stuff to Get You Unstuck. It's time for you to break those shackles of stuck. Let's get you moving forward. It's time for the Coach Curl podcast.
Hey there, it's Tony Curl here, welcoming you to episode 25, the relaunch of the Coach Curl podcast. And today we're chatting with Dr. Steve Maribold. Hey there and welcome. It's Tony Curl here with the relaunch of the Coach Curl podcast. And today it's my absolute pleasure to bring you the unique and the brilliant mind of my friend Dr. Steve Maribold. Steve's an international best-selling author, human behavior academic, and the creator of the powerful coaching and influencing tool Psycho-Neuro-Actualization. But before I introduce him, I'd just quickly like to share the vision of the podcast. The Coach Curl podcast is a way to connect people looking for more with more. We'll be interviewing some amazing people. Some who'll be in the public spotlight, others will be less well known, but they'll all have a common thread. They're working on achieving their purpose, their greatest self, and often against overwhelming odds. They inspire those that know them to take steps forward in pursuit of their own dreams. And I'm honored that I'll be sharing their story with them with our podcast listeners. In doing so, I know that we can impact positively the people looking to achieve more, looking to break the shackles of stuck, and to bring awareness to the behaviors from people who have been successful in their own terms. And today's guest fits the bill incredibly. Dr. Steve Maribold started sharing his words by handing out 85 copies of his poem, Dare to Be, at New York Railway Station. His history of journaling his thoughts has created a library of best-selling books, and his words and his picture quotes are shared by millions around the world every week. He's been a friend of mine now for a number of years, and after a quick word from about a wonderful not-for-profit organization that we both support, Carter's Cause, it's my honor to introduce to you and have a chat with Dr. Steve Maribold to relaunch the Coach Curl podcast.
Coach Curl proudly supports Carter's Cause, raising funds for Heart Kids Australia, honouring the brave legacy of Heart Angel Carter, who passed in 2013, just 30 days old. All funds raised by Carter's Cause go to aid the families of kids born with congenital heart disease. Learn more by visiting www.carterscause.org.au.
Welcome to the Coach Curl podcast, Dr. Steve Maribold. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I am fantastic. I'm thinking about the contrast on where we're sitting at the moment. You're sitting over there in Port Washington, New York, no doubt, at the close of a very cold day, and I'm sitting here in Brisbane, Queensland, at the onset, at the launching of a brand new day, where it promises to be 31 degrees Celsius. So
that is super hot, and today here was a pretty cold day and a long day. It's a nice evening. The sun went down about an hour ago, and it's a chilly evening. But thanks for having me on, and congrats, man! Congrats on the relaunch of your podcast.
Thanks, Steve, and I'm really honoured to have you as my very first guest. Steve, you recently spent some time here in Australia. We enjoyed having your company here in October, and I'm pretty excited to be saying that we've got you coming back in March and April. What was your impressions of Australia and the places that you saw? We spent some time on the Gold Coast. We spent some time in in the city of Brisbane. So what were some of the impressions that you had about the Australian people, the Australian culture, and what you saw?
You know, I saw so much. First of all, it's beautiful to look at. I mean, the scenery is beautiful. The people are incredibly kind. I think that like a lot of cities in the world, you have the same, you know, people trying to do better, trying to build their lives, trying to find that balance of enjoyment. Well, what I really enjoyed about Australia is it seemed to be not such a stressful place. It seemed that the local community there had it figured out in a way where they found a healthy balance between work and play. One of the things I did find with my business eyes, with my business acumen, were places where where there were holes. I would call them holes. Holes in businesses where they could absolutely increase not only their bottom line but their productivity. I found it wonderful that the businesses really do their best to create a wonderful work environment. What I found lacking were some of those same businesses didn't put the same amount of ideas on the product themselves. If they could find that happy balance, finding the product where you're continuously making your product not only available, not only refining and enhancing your product, but at the same time creating an environment conducive to good health, happiness, and productivity for your staff, I think that would be tremendous. I found some holes in that, and I really enjoyed speaking to some businesses there. But all in all, I loved – I think what I loved the most about Australia were the people, definitely the people, as far as conversationally, how broad-minded so many of them were. It was a great conversation. For me, it's the people make any place for me. Beaches are beautiful. There's beaches, beautiful beaches in a lot of places. The people make the difference for me, and for me, the Aussie people were something that I don't ever forget, and I look forward to going back.
That's awesome to hear, Steve. And it was exciting for me to bring you to Australia and to bring you into a community that wasn't necessarily fully aware of the power that Steve Maraboli brings. So just for my listeners today, would you like to tell me a little bit about your upbringing, how many brothers and sisters, and maybe just share something of importance that came out of your out of that upbringing, out of that childhood, an important event that's impacted you?
I think my childhood in general, you know, my childhood in general was impacted. Of course, it shapes you. It shapes you. My siblings, I grew up with my brother, my little sister. I grew up with her just a teeny bit. I was 11 by the time she was born. So I only spent a few years living at home before I went away into the military. I have an older brother who I had the older brother experience with. You know, for the first 12 years of your life, he beats you up. And I think that's just pretty much the big brother experience. And I think that what shaped it most for me was I was born here in the United States. My parents weren't. I'm a first generation American, and my parents were, for lack of a better term, poor immigrants. And I think that growing up, me, my mom, my brother, in a little apartment, at times, my mom's siblings that she would bring over from South America would come and stay with us. So there would be several of us in a little apartment, and learning that sense of community within your own family, that tight-knit community. There weren't different rooms you can go in to watch your own TV. So you were just talking to each other and learning lessons about life and hearing wisdom, learning what to do, learning what not to do. I think that mattered. Another thing that mattered in my upbringing was having, because my parents came from that kind of life, they came to the United States because the poverty they were living in was something I can't even fathom. And so they taught my brother and I to be self-reliant in that way. I can't remember a time that my parents bought me a bicycle. I had to go work and buy my own bicycle and those type of things, and creating and saying, you know what, I want a bicycle. What can I do at home? What can I do around the house, Mom? What can I do to help my dad? What can I do to do this, to buy a bicycle? And when I bought that bicycle, Tony, I took care of that thing. You can't even imagine how I took care of that thing.
I can imagine, yeah.
Because it took so much hard work, and I was a kid. If I wanted new clothes, I mean, you name it, I really worked for it. Literally, from the age of 14, at 14 years old, I had two jobs. I went to school, and then on a few days a week, I worked at Burger King.
Okay.
And then on the weekend, I worked at the local movie theater. And so I was the kid at the door who would rip your tickets when you came in and said, "Oh, your theater's on the left, your theater's on the right." I was that kid, and I lied to them and told them I was 16 years old. This is before the internet or anything like that. There were no your little worker permit ID wasn't, you know, computerized. You just filled it out. So I filled it out, told them I was 16. I was 14. And I wanted the money. So I would work. I would go to school during the day. I would work in the later evenings. And I had two jobs from the age of 14 on. And so I think that matters. That matters. I think when people call me a workhorse now, for me, this is the lightest I've ever the lightest amount of work I've ever done. At least now I get to do things I love. I didn't love those jobs, but I sure did love getting a paycheck every week.
Yeah, it's always so. That work ethic is something that's really relevant still today. And I've known you since 2013, Steve, and you've shared so many stories, and I'm now visualizing some of those stories that you've talked to me about, like handing out Dare to Be at train stations as your first expose into getting your work out there. And
dude, I watched my parents. I watched my mom was she was a kid with kids. You know, my brother and I were young, crazy boys, and she was probably not. I look back now, to me she was my mom, but now I look back as an adult and I'm thinking she was probably in her mid-20s.
Wow. Yeah.
In her mid-20s with two lunatic Maraboli boys going crazy, climbing the walls, doing whatever, climbing trees, doing what, hitting each other, throwing things, all kinds of stuff. So yeah, and I watched my dad, who's a philosopher in his own way, probably one of the smartest people you'll ever speak with. And he would, if he had to be a painter one day, he was a painter. If he was a carpenter one day, he'd be a carpenter. If he had to put his hand down a toilet and be a plumber the next day, he did. He did whatever he had to do to feed us and to give us a better life than he and my mom had. And my mom took care of us at home. Like, she would do whatever she had to do to make sure that we were happy and comfortable. I watched that, and it's nothing they ever said. My dad has never said to me, "Hey, you have to work hard. You have to." He has never said that to me. I watched this man do it. I watched him put roofing shingles on his back and climb a roof on a ladder. I watched him do that for 30 years, and so. So for me, when I wanted to build a business, I don't expect anyone to do it. I put down the work and I'm going to hand out. I don't have a myopic view of it. I know that the big office on the corner in the city is coming, but for right now, I'm still on my bicycle and I'm handing out flyers at the train station. Oh, yeah. And that's, ironically, I would do it with my cousin Pat. And I didn't have any money to pay him to stand there with me. Yeah. So ironically, I would say, if you do this with me, I'll take you down to Burger King and buy you something.
That's awesome, Steve. And one of the other stories that really impacted me when we've talked is your passion for reading. And that started at an early age too, didn't it?
Well, it did because, two things. One, there was only one TV in our house, and my mom had so many rules. I mean, she wanted us outside and playing. And again, the wisdom of my mom, I look back now and I look at her like she's Yoda, you know, she's like this ever wise human being. But the reality of it is she was 20-something years old and her kids were lunatics, so it was much better to have them playing outside than breaking everything in the apartment. So she probably sent us outside for that. But there wasn't a lot of TV watching in our home. We didn't have at the time, not a lot of people had cable television. Yeah. That was still a new thing. Yeah. My parents certainly weren't about to pay for that. So we only had a few channels. We would get together as a family on most nights and watch, you know, whatever the big shows were, Three's Company and that kind of stuff. We would get together and watch that. And so that was on. But for the most part, it was about playing outside. And when we were inside, I really enjoyed reading. I enjoyed reading a lot. It was fascinating to me that people can write like that, or that you can read words and images pop into your head. To me, that was always fascinating. And once I started, I know you've heard this story a million times, but when I would be on those moments, Saturday mornings, when my brother and I were allowed to watch TV, yeah, and we'd watch all the Looney Tunes and we'd watch all the Wile E. Coyotes and the Roadrunners and we'd watch all that stuff, and Scooby-Doo would come on.
Yeah.
I don't think that there was as many rules for commercials back then, because they would have these like Dianetics commercials, and this L. Ron Hubbard guy, and the guy is crazy. He's crazy as ketchup, and he started that Scientology religion. But back in those days, he was just writing books on self-analysis. Now, I was a little kid who had no business reading a book on self-analysis. But when I saw the commercial, and the commercial was like, hey, what if you can control your thoughts? What if your whole life was happening in your head? And I was like, oh, wow, yeah, what if? So I talked my mom into getting me the book at the corner bookstore. That's when corner bookstores existed. And I went and got the book at the corner bookstore, and from what I understood of it, it was fascinating to me. My mom, who was very Catholic, very Dios mío Catholic, she handed me the Bible and any other thing that she could hand me that was of some sort of spiritual context, and I started reading these things and these philosophies, and something synchronistic happened.
Yeah.
My dad, as I said, my dad would work in any context, any kind of labor context that he could find. And he started to build a good clientele. He was a workhorse, and there's nobody on planet Earth more trustworthy than my dad. And people saw that.
Yeah.
And so the way that our community where I grew up was built is you have the really wealthy people and the people who service the really wealthy people. And my dad's clients were really wealthy, and one of them passed away. One of these old wealthy clients passed away, and my dad was tasked with cleaning up some of his estate. And really what that meant was they wanted him to take a lot of this stuff to the dumpster. Yeah. and throw it out. And amongst these things were this guy's little library. And wow. Now this guy had some tremendous books in there, and my dad didn't want to throw away books, so he brought them home.
Yep.
He brought he brought these old, you know that smell of old kind of books in there, yeah, all the leather bound hardcover books, and they just, yeah, have that smell to them. He brought all these cases of books. My mom was ready to go crazy because we didn't have enough room as it was, and now here he brings these books, and and so he brings these books, and I start little by little reaching in and grabbing these books, and so many fascinating things about the brain, and Marcus Aurelius's Meditations is in there, and Win Friends and Influence People's in there, and Plutarch's Lives is in there, and all of these incredible – the works of Shakespeare are in there, and breakdowns of the work of Shakespeare, and I'm reading all of these things. I didn't know it at the time, but now that I look back, I say, you know, I was reading the things successful people read. Yeah. I just happened to be a kid. And so, yeah, I was always fascinated with what that did to my mind. And when you combine it with my upbringing, when you combine it with the incredible example my parents gave, it just created a good kind of soup of behavior that created Well, me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say that because you've been, you've had fantastic role models in respect of the behaviours and the ethics that they've had, and that's obviously impacted in what you've done. And when people read a book, I see so many people that read a book and say, "Yeah, that was great," and then not do anything with it. And I think that that's one of those great shames that we have. We get the goosebumps, and then we don't put it into action. I think that's really sad.
Well, it is sad, and it's also a reflection on the author. I have a very particular writing style where I want to tell you as much as possible and as little as possible. What I loved about those type of the writers of old,
were they weren't.
They didn't draw it all out for you. You know, if it was a fiction book and telling a story, yes, they'll paint the scenery and they'll do those type of things. But if it was something about self-analysis, if it was Mark Twain talking about Pudd'nhead Wilson's calendar, or it was Robert Ingersoll writing an essay on religion and the social state, or it was a narrative in Plutarch's Lives, they didn't really paint the picture for you. They gave you the essence. And then you are painting the picture for yourself with that essence. And I think that that art is lost. Yeah. And because I was raised by that art, it's my writing style. It's my speaking style. And so I tell you a lot and a little at the same time. I give you the essence and the emotion and let you take it. Because it's only if you want to change something that you'll change. You won't want to change it if I want you to change it. What do you give a shit if I want you to change it? You'll only change it if you want to change it. So for me, it's about reminding someone of their ability and opportunity to change their lives, reminding them of the power that they have, and then letting them see what that means for themselves, not what it means for me. You don't have my upbringing. You don't live where I live. You don't have my schooling. You're not me. So for me to tell you incessantly about me in my books is silly. I want to tell you about you. Because what's true about you as far as possibility, potentiality, what's true about you as far as having 24 hours a day to make healthier decisions, what's true about you as far as the behavioral analysis and our ability to refine, improve, and enhance our own lives, what's true about you there is true about every single person, person reading. And for me, that's the service an author should be thinking of.
So it's a real influencing process, isn't it? And in many ways, people would see that as a very simple concept and actually miss the point. And I was thinking just the other day, as I often will do, is that you need to be sufficiently advanced to embrace simplicity, don't you?
Well, you have to get out of your own way to embrace simplicity. The beautiful thing about simplicity is kind of like science itself, right? So the beautiful thing about it is that it's true whether you embrace it or not.
Yeah.
And so you'll embrace simplicity when you're done struggling. Yeah. You'll embrace simplicity when you're done struggling trying to control things you don't control. I mean, most people don't realize it, but if you just take a second to look at your life and how much of your stress comes from trying to control things you just don't control. You have enough trouble controlling yourself, and you're trying to control other things. Save yourself the heartache. And once you start letting go of those things, letting go. A lot of times, Tony, letting go isn't that you're actually letting go. It's letting go of the delusion that you were controlling it anyway.
I love that. And
that's really it. Because when people are like, "I really have to let go of this." Dude, you don't have to let go of that shit. That let go of you a long time ago. Yesterday is not touching you. You're touching yesterday. It's not touching you.
Absolutely.
And so people have this delusion of power, and it's just not there. And when you're arguing with reality in that sense, it causes stress. So, yes, simplicity takes a certain level of maturity and a certain level of tired. You know, there's a type of tired that makes you feel like you need a nap. And there's the type of tired that makes you feel like you need some peace. When you're the type of tired that you need some peace, that what brings on the call to simplicity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Steve, what are you working on at the moment?
Wow. I thought you said this was only an hour interview. I have a bunch of things working now. Finishing up as many projects, writing projects as I do. I used to say that I'm writing a particular book. I realize that that doesn't work for me anymore. It worked for the younger version of me. It doesn't work for this version of me. So I have different writing projects that I work on.
Okay.
And so when I'm feeling a particular project, I open the book and see which projects I'm feeling, and I'm feeling one, and I sit and I write. I sit and I write. At the end of writing all those, I'll probably have three books. But instead of just focusing on one theme, one project. So I do that. So I write as often as I can. I'm never in a rush to get out a book. So when they're done, they're done. But I write as often as I can. I try to communicate with as many people as I can. I have a pretty heavy speaking schedule. Because of my business acumen, I do get to, travel, quite a bit and speak to different businesses, not just, national but international businesses, and influencers and specters of politics and corporate and media. So I do quite a bit of speaking. It's my background in behavioral science, my ability to bridge that into the business world and talk about personal dynamics, whether it's success for a business or successful the executives or successful for anyone within a corporation, it seems to be pretty popular. So I keep pretty busy doing that. We just filmed a movie. So I'm working those negotiations and those deals as well. So to bring this story, an empowering and an inspirational story, to major media, without it coming to a big cost to the people who would be watching it. So always working on things, always working at refining and enhancing everything I can do to be as impactful in this world as possible. And I'm leaving out all of the philanthropy work that we do with our books and with our movies, only because I think it's kind of cheesy to talk about that.
Okay. And I can certainly attest to the power and the impact that you have on business audiences, as we had you here in Brisbane with a packed out audience of Brisbane business owners, and they walked out floating. And do you remember that little piece of feedback that I shared with you? And we had boxes there for people to tick, whether it was a great, good, or I think average were the three. And this person had written her own little box and just put the words fucking epic.
Hey, listen, people love hearing the truth, brother. They love hearing the truth, and when it doesn't come from a salesman who's trying to sell you something, it's even better. And so those type of business expos, you can change. You can change not only a business. There's a correlate. You know this. You're deep in the cognitive neurosciences as I am. You understand that there is no separation. How you do anything is how you do everything. So you may hire me to speak about your corporate world, and I will. What you'll realize when I'm done speaking is that I also just dissected your personal life, and not only gave you the tools you need to bring your business to the next level, but to also bring your personal life to the next level. And people love that. People love that. Behaviors, behavior. Connections, connection. Success is success. Business is always going to be a matter of numbers. The numbers will dance for you in different ways, but it's always going to be a matter of numbers. So what makes businesses different? What makes businesses stronger? What makes businesses successful is going to be the mindsets of its leaders. The mindsets of its leaders is what's going to determine the viability of the business, because they're going to know where to put the emphasis. The emphasis on product, on quality control, the emphasis on the creating an environment conducive to the productivity of the workers. These type of things come from leaders. Those type of decisions come from leaders with great mindsets. And that's what I go set out and do. Point out the holes and let's fill them. See those strengths and fan the flames of those strengths. Yeah. See those weaknesses and create as little exposure to those weaknesses as possible. And that's really what most businesses don't do. Most businesses are stuck in with leaders who have a very myopic view. It's like a cyclical myopia, if you will. Just they have these business school educations, which is great. I did the same thing. I get it. They have these assembly line business school educations, and all you're learning is bad habits that are handed down, yeah. And taught to you with fancy names and depending on the people who bought the building that you were learning in. And really, a lot of that stuff, when you get into the corporate world, you realize is on paper, fantastic. But in practical use, not fantastic, yeah. Because there are humans involved. Yeah. And humans have a very specific behavioral pattern that is often incongruent with corporate patterns. So you have to align those. You have to align those so that it can run efficiently and powerfully. Yeah. You go into the most successful corporations in the world, and you will find leaders that are dynamic. They are dynamic, they are insightful, they are fanning the flames of their employees and their team. They're not trying to cut anybody down. They're trying to make absolute monster brains out of all of them, creating an environment that's conducive to the growth of the company and success and productivity, but at the same time focused on ensuring that the product itself, whatever the product is viable and relevant. Yeah. And that is huge. These are the demise of major companies, is that they created an excellent system for their employees and forgot to maintain a relevant product. Yeah. And so, yeah, so having someone like me there, I'm fortunate that I've built an incredible reputation for changing those businesses. And even in my short time in Brisbane, Australia, when I was there, just a tiny observation I made about the availability of the coffee market in the morning, yeah. For people who want to get up early and exercise or take a walk along that beautiful city. I noticed a something. I brought it up, and it changed. It changed. It actually created quite a stir in Australia.
Absolutely, we all need our daily fuel, don't we? But that's one of the exciting things about setting the agenda for March and April, Steve, because you have impact on so many levels. So we're looking at things like a boardroom discussion with senior executives and board members. We're looking for a business breakfast or a lunch type environment, but we're also looking at those larger scale public events, because you resonate and you connect right across from, you know, the young teenagers sharing your quotes online to senior corporate executives.
Well, you know, and that's just my own business model. The quotes you see online is mostly my insights and poetry and reflections on that kind of stuff. And that's the stuff that we do for these books that I write. And the books I write is all for philanthropy. I don't keep a penny of that money. So we've written several international bestsellers, and 100% of that money goes into our Empowered Women programs, our veteran programs, and a bunch of other literacy programs that I'm now involved with, that I'm connecting with the UN with, United Nations with now. So that's what I do for those. But as far as the corporate world, there is nobody that has the acumen I have, the business experience, and combined with a depth and understanding of behavioral psychology and behavioral science. I'd be curious if there would be anyone who has that at all. You mentioned a board. I just did it yesterday here, a major company here, Morgan Stanley, and I was in the room with some of the wealthiest investors in the world, and we're talking. Guess what? Business strategies, behavioral strategies. And you and I have had this discussion a million times. I talked to them mostly yesterday was about the people on your personal board.
Yeah, yeah.
That was – how many times have you heard me say that?
Yeah.
This is a conversation I'm having with these people, Tony. You've heard me tell it to people on the street. I was telling it to a room full of billionaires yesterday, and they were just as captivated. You know why? Because behavior is behavior.
Yeah.
And so that kind of stuff matters, and that's why these talks are so effective. And I look forward to it, doing it in Australia again. I there was a lot of businesses I wanted to go speak with, and a lot of places that I absolutely know could actually, we could absolutely change their businesses. Absolutely. 100%.
Absolutely. And we're looking forward to having you back. That's for sure. Steve, tell me about this thing called failure, because a lot of people feel that they've failed, or a failure kicks them in the ass and keeps them down. So obviously at times we all experience this concept of not getting what we wanted or where we needed to be. And for some people it's a fatal blow, for others it's a learning opportunity. So tell me about where failure has shaped what you've done and how you've responded from it.
Well, I think that the healthiest relationship you have with failure, because it's going to be what you experience the most.
I
think that the healthier relationship you have with failure, a lot of times failure is not a thing. You know, like, it's not like, oh, look here, failure. It's not a thing. It's usually a contrast. Failure is usually a contrast to the attachment you had to what an outcome would have been.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not like an actual thing. You didn't fail because Wednesday came and you didn't have your $100.
Yeah.
You just, in your head, you said on Sunday, by Wednesday I'll have $100.
Yeah.
But you just became attached with something that you pulled out of your ass. Like you didn't fail, you just, it wasn't in alignment with the attachment that you had.
Yeah.
Let's look at the behaviors. What made you think you'd have it by Wednesday? Let's look at what you did. Well, I didn't do anything different. Well, then you won't have it next Wednesday either. You know, so becoming familiar with that attachment to things that don't actually exist and creating a plan. There are people who are upset. You know, we're coming up on the new year here.
Yeah.
And so there are people who are upset that they made it all the way here and nothing changed in their life. What they're not looking at is that they didn't change. So when nothing changes, nothing will change.
Yeah.
And so that's a failure they'll feel. They'll feel like another year went by. A lot of companies feeling that stagnant level of non-growth, which is considered in many companies failure as well. So my relationship to failure is an intimate one, because you experience it so often. What I do is I do my best to create a methodology in my life that I can experience progress.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I know, I just told you a little trick that I had.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't say I'm writing books anymore, because that doesn't work for me like way it did when I was younger.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that somewhere in there, there was heartache, because I was like, oh shit, I'm not writing this friggin' book. Well, because, and feeling that failure. Well, no, I created a parameter. I had an outdated parameter of how I work. So let me fix that. Let me, instead of focusing, I want to write a book on poetry, but I'm really just thinking business structures lately. Let me make sure that I have plenty of topics about business I want to write about. So then I flip to the business writing prompts, and then I write that.
Yep.
And that way I'm still creating progress and don't have that feeling of failure. And like I said to you, when they're done, they're done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Isn't that such a healthier relationship?
Very much.
Because the other way, if I had said, oh, I'm going to create a business book next, I'm writing my business book, and then I was feeling poetic, I wouldn't write the poetry and I wouldn't write the quotes,
yeah,
because I have to be focused on business.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm not writing the business, and I'll be like, oh man, what am I even doing? You know, you start questioning everything.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that anymore. I want progress, not failure. I don't want to be stopped. I want to keep moving. And if this is what I'm doing now, then this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And so that's the way that I look at it. Failure isn't, it's not a thing. It raises your attention to your behavior. Everything raises your attention to your behavior. So whether it's business or not, if you're not happy with your business bottom line, if you're not happy with that, then you look at the numbers, you look at the behavior behind the numbers, and you'll find it every time. It's not magic. It just requires honesty.
Absolutely. It reminds me of that quote. I think a gentleman called Steve Maraboli wrote it, that a step towards your dreams is a step away from regret. So it's
absolutely.
It sounds very much like you work consistently in where your strengths are. Is that, would that be a fair statement, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing soccer my whole life. I'm not going to go try and dunk a basketball.
Yeah.
and so it's not, you know what I mean? So yeah. I work to my strengths, and that's exactly what I do. So my strengths are in communicating. My strengths are in writing. My strengths are in taking complex ideas of business, complex business models, and simplifying them for brilliant people who want to affect change in their lives. My strength is taking complex psychological models, complex behavioral science models, and simplifying them so people can enact it in their personal lives.
Yeah.
And that's my strength. So that's what I focus on. My strength is taking an emotion I may feel and making it poetic, but at the same time impactful and thought provoking. Those are my strengths. So that's where I stick. My strengths aren't in a lot of places, so I avoid it. I used to try and do everything. But the more you try and do everything, especially things that don't go to your strengths, the more you're going to get frustrated. And I know there's people out there that are saying, well, don't you want to build those strengths? My answer, no. You go ahead and keep frustrating yourself, and you can do that. For me, I'm done fighting with reality.
Yeah, so you just preempted my next question, because my next question was very much along the lines of, what would you say to people who are focused on improving what they're not good at, as opposed to playing in their strength zone?
There's a time to improve where you're not good at, but never at the cost of what progresses you.
Yeah, and that's a good concept. I can visualize that. What progresses?
Well, you have to take that, because when you're looking at progress, you take away the power of fear. Remember, words have power, and you take away the power that and fear that comes with the word failure. And so you take away that power. Failure is the thing you'll experience the most, because it is that the feeling of disconnect from attachment you have to something that doesn't really exist. But you take away that power, because if you give that word failure power, a lot of people stop when they fail.
Yeah.
And it gives that word power. And now anyone else looking says, oh, you stopped because you failed. But for me, no. You're using that failure as an excuse. You're using the power of that word fail. You're giving it power as an excuse not to chase your dreams, as an excuse to not get better, as an excuse. I'm not going to use that failure as an excuse. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to give it that power over me. It's a part of life. It isn't life. Yeah. It's something to deal with, not something that chokes you out. It doesn't suffocate you. And that's, for me, perspective is everything. So for me, if I see something is too powerful in my life, too powerful, I'll change my perspective on it. Failure is one of those things. Instead of kicking myself for not writing a particular book because I happen to have 10 other thoughts in my head, why am I going to fight and not write anything? Let me write those 10 thoughts, and maybe it'll lead me to something else.
Yeah.
And instead of one book that was half-assed written because I forced myself to write it, I end up with 3 powerful books that flowed naturally.
Yeah, absolutely.
All because I changed my agreement with reality, and I changed my relationship with the word failure.
Yeah. The agreement with reality is something that you speak about often, and you shared it with the Brisbane audiences when you were here. So just talk a little bit through that agreement with reality.
Well, the agreement with reality is vital. So everyone on Earth, anyone listening to this and everyone not listening to this, is experiencing the Earth, experiencing life through the filters of their reality.
Yeah.
As you think, so shall you be. And so the reality of it is, there's actually cognitive neuroscientists, the ones who debate about what they call the hard question of consciousness.
Yeah.
And let them debate forever. But they call this the egocentric paradigm. And some of them will say that nobody actually touches reality at all, because everything is happening in your mind. Everything's happening in your brain. Tony is a story you're telling yourself. Steve is a story I'm telling myself. And so everything's happening in your brain. So there are many cognitive scientists who say the egocentric paradigm is that nobody touches actual reality. Everybody only experiences their version of reality. And so while they're arguing that and what that means for their hard question of consciousness, I'll let them fight about that, but I'll listen to what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I'll think back of all the books I read, and I'll think back of all the successful people, whether in corporate America and in international business or professional athletes. I'll think about what they have in common. And I'll think about the books that shaped me as a kid and shaped me as a teenager and shaped me as an adult. I'll think about the great explorers and the entrepreneurs of the modern day and the past day. I'll think about the great scientists and the people who have shaped the world. And what I find 100% connects them was their perspective, their agreement with reality.
Yeah.
They were often doing things that other people were saying were impossible. And the people who were saying it was impossible, guess what? Weren't doing it. But they were doing it.
Yeah.
They had a different agreement with reality. And so for me, paying attention to that, when I started coaching clients nearly two decades ago, I started seeing that. And I wrote about agreement with reality in my first book. I was 24 when that was published. So I was between 18 and 22 when I wrote that stuff. I saw it at an early age, and yes, you start seeing that how a person thinks, like Shakespeare said in the second act of Hamlet, he said, "Nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so." He's talking about agreement with reality. And then I'm thinking back to this Jesus character in the New Testament, and one of the particular, so he's healing, and he's getting this credit for healing all kinds of people. He, Tony, meanwhile, him, the whole time, he's saying, "Dude, I'm a regular person. You guys are more powerful than I am because you guys are seeing this from the start." And one person that he heals, she just touches his cloak and she's healed. And she drops to the ground and she says, thank you so much. You healed my disease. I had a disease forever and you've healed it." And he tells her, "Hey, listen, get up. It's not me that heals you. It's your belief that I heal you that heals you." And that's agreement with reality. So here I'm looking back and I'm seeing scientists, I'm seeing theological figures, I'm seeing this stuff, seeing it in my clients who don't think they can do it, so they can't do it. And the second you can influence them to see that they can do it, guess what? They do it.
Yeah.
Agreement with reality. You see that in human feats in physiology as well.
Yeah.
No one can beat the 5-minute mile.
Absolutely.
No one. It's impossible until the first person does it. Then what happens?
Yeah.
It becomes possible in other people's agreement with reality, and then all of a sudden everyone's kicking the shit out of the 5-minute mile.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
your body didn't change, but your whole physiology was enhanced by your agreement with reality, and that's true for everybody.
Absolutely. Steve, just one last question, I guess, before I let you go back to the cold climes of Port Washington. You know, many people dream about success, and knowing you, you've accomplished so much already. You're an advisor to Fortune 500 companies and government departments. You've impacted and influenced people from Pink to the Pope. You know, your quotes are shared by millions around the world. You've changed the coffee industry here in Brisbane.
That's right.
But there's so much left. What does success ultimately look like for Steve Maraboli?
What I told you, as long as I'm progressing every day, as long as I'm impacting the world in a positive way every day, as long as I'm medicine for more people than I'm poison, for me, that's success. I feel like my parents taught me, and that I've learned just through the people I've admired throughout my life, people that I've met and people that I've never met, that I've only read their words. A lot of those people that I admire from their books, we never walked the earth at the same time. You know,
yeah.
a lot of the great thinkers that I admire, we were never on Earth at the same time, but yet I still admire their words and their philosophies. And for me, I continue doing what I'm doing. I'm going to keep creating ideas, programs, sharing with them, inspiring and trying to help as many people as I can, help as many businesses as I can, help in every way that I can. Like I said, to leave more people better off when you finally lay down and take your last breath, to make sure that there are more people better off because you lived than not. For me, that's success.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Steve, where can people find you?
I'm a pretty findable fella. If you even start getting my last name kind of right in Google, you'll find me. It's stevemaraboli.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You'll find my quotes and that kind of stuff. And sure, every now and then I grab a microphone and do a podcast myself. All that stuff you could find at stevemaraboli.com. I'll be in Australia the end of March and until mid-April. Hitting a few cities, so I'm looking forward to that and ready to change some lives. If you're done just talking about change, if you're done just talking about bringing your business to the next level, if you're done just talking about bringing your life to the next level, then check it out. Don't miss it. It doesn't happen often.
No, absolutely. And we are so looking forward to it. Steve, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a real honor once again to have you as my first guest on relaunching the Coach Curl podcast. I'm indebted to you as a friend and a colleague, and good night. And snuggle up, it's nice and cold. I'd believe.
my pleasure, brother. But you know, when I do these kind of interviews, I love this so much that it's cold and I'm friggin' sweating. Like it's I get so passionate about this because it's when you realize the impact you're having, that somewhere along the lines between what I've read and the way I was raised and my life experience, somewhere I've learned a human hack, really. Like I've learned how to hack the behavior and give the people the tools they need to bring their life to another level. And for me, I'm sweating, brother. I'm sweating. So have a great day, man. And thank you for having me. Congrats on your podcast. You're a brilliant, brilliant man. So I hope that they subscribe because you have a lot of great things to say, man.
Awesome. Thanks. Much appreciated. Thank you very much, Steve.
Take care, my brother.
We'll see you in
the Coach Curl podcast is brought to you by Think and Grow Business, the home of the Think and Grow Business Mastermind. If you're serious about growing your business, get serious and join a mastermind group today. Find out more at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. And now it's back to Coach Curl.
So, wow, how was that? I call that 48 minutes of awesome in anybody's language. One thing I know about Steve Maraboli, he's a living, breathing example of everything that he talks about. He eats healthy. He exercises daily. He does MMA training. He recently launched legendary MMA trainers Ray Longo's podcast, and he was the very first person on Training Day with Ray. So he's a very fit person. He lives with intentionality. And for those that loved and know Brisbane, he loved Kangaroo Point, and he loved the steps and the challenges that he presented. He joined in with another legend's exercise group while he was there. And one of the things, he calls himself a nerd, and I'm going to agree, he's a true nerd. But at the same time, he's got this amazing ability to connect with people, something that I've really have never seen before, this ability to connect with people, meet at their level, and really provide them what they need. You know, I spent 10 days with him in October, and it was like nothing else that I've ever experienced. Every day there was gold that was being uncovered. There was new ways to think about things. There were new observations. Importantly, there was a new way to laugh at myself, because one of the key messages that Steve talks about is that we're all ridiculous. And when we allow ourselves to actually know that, it helps us look after what we can look after. He talked about the illusion of control. So But there are some things that we can be doing that help ourselves. And when we actually realize how ridiculous we are and how ridiculous our own self-talk is, it actually helps us move forward and look after the things that we can. Things like getting up early, look after yourself, work hard and give your best. They're not unknown concepts in our world. And they're the concepts and the behaviors that I see with Steve each and every day that I saw him. And one of the other challenges that he presents is always be looking at things in as many ways possible. You know, one way, our own agreement with reality, our own version, our own perception of the way that the world is, can only be challenged by ourselves. And that's a very clear message. You know, one of the favorite stories that I had from his visit when he was here in October was on the very last Saturday. He was flying out on the Sunday. And on the very last Saturday, he's gone for a walk and he's headed back over to the Kangaroo Point Cliffs. And on his way, he stopped in at the Queensland University of Technology here in the city. He was wearing his New York Islander hoodie. And one of the students heard the accent and asked, you know, probably being a little bit smart about where he was from. And Steve's never one to pick up on sarcasm or cynicism really quick. No, he actually is. But he sat down and he just started talking. And initially there was a group of students, probably three or four, I guess. But within a short time later, there was eight students there. And when he left them an hour later, there were 30. It was amazing. And they were all just soaking in the wisdom and the philosophies of Mariboli. It was unbelievable to see. And that's why we're so excited about March and April. We've got a team together and we're working on some dates and some engagements for him. So we have him back in Australia from the 28th of March and he'll finish up on the 9th of April when he'll either take some R&R or fly back to the US. Now, some of the range of events that we've got boardroom disruptions where we just know the power of adding Steve's thought process into a senior executive team. He does that with the likes of Morgan and Stanley and Sears and Geico and JCPenney and the likes over in the States. And it's time that Australian companies had the power of Mariboli. So, and you get that chance. You get that chance during this break. We've got some private corporate events that we're organising. We've got business breakfast engagements. And we're also holding public events. So for all those people that follow his quotes, and, you know, I think on last count on Facebook, that's well over 500,000 people. And as I said, his quotes get shared by millions weekly. So there'll be some public events where his public followers will be able to come along and catch him at a very reasonable price. You know, we'll be starting off in Sydney, we'll be heading to Melbourne, and then we're finishing back in Brisbane, where Steve is really looking forward to catching up with some of the people he met last time. We've got our famous coffee man on the bridge there going over to South Bank, and of course he's looking forward to catching up with those Kangaroo Point stairs. You know, if you want to connect and learn more about what's happening with Mariboli in March, come visit me at coachcurl.com and our team will certainly be in touch. Now, just rest assured, this doesn't happen often. So don't sit there on your hands and, you know, make the contact now, because the itinerary is being worked through now as we speak. And if you have a company or you have a business and you really want to utilize the power of the Mariboli thought process within your business, please make contact now. Reach out. You know, can I just tell you, the buzz that was in Brisbane after our business breakfast in October was just sensational. The social media was going off. People walked out or floated out more importantly, but more importantly is that they actually took active steps in their life, and people are still talking about that particular breakfast event. So, you know, this is not your run-of-the-mill breakfast event. So That's what awaits you 2017 when Steve Maraboli returns to Australia. So I hope you've enjoyed our show today, and I think that we hit the mark pretty well. Next time we will have an Aussie legend, an absolute Aussie legend in my eyes. Sandy's helped millions around our country lose weight, get healthy and improve their mindset. Who will that be? You'll have to subscribe to the podcast to find out, but I'm really excited to interview this Australian legend and to get his thoughts on how he can help and advise and support and inspire you to take those next steps. Do you want more? Just hold on, just one tick.
Join the group of people impacted by Seriously Simple Stuff to Get You Unstuck, the first book by Tony Coach Curl. Available at Amazon, Tony's Simple Stuff provides the tool for people to master your life and aspirations. 20% of every book sold supports Carter's cause. Back to Coach Curl.
Well, that's another episode of the Coach Curl podcast. Thanks very much for tuning in. A big shout out to the sponsor, Think and Grow Business. Don't forget to visit carterscause.org.au and show them some love, and they appreciate your ongoing support. Don't forget, rule number one,
don't be an asshole.
Until next time, I'll see you then.